I can honestly say that's the best news I've heard all day.
Joe Torti Show.
Kind of reminded me of a dark, gothic Neil Diamond.
That's like exactly what I'm going for.
This is the Joe Torti Show.
What show are you listening to?
Joe Torti Show.
I'm trying to be patient, but you're making it incredibly difficult.
I can say big loud things. I can be dramatic with him.
Can we just end this already?
Now it's time. The Joe Torti Show.
Yes, it is. What's going on, Philadelphia? Joe Torti here with you, 97.5 The Fanatic. You heard Mike say it at the end of his show. From May 2010, the three-goal comeback to win Flyers-Bruins. We're commemorating that today. And you know what? We deserve a win. We're talking about the biggest losses and the most disappointing games and things like that. Hard to think about, you know, outside of championships, because obviously the Super Bowl is going to supersede anything that we could possibly put out there for the greatest or the most fun or anything like that in terms of those games. But there are so many non-championship performances from the Flyers, from the Sixers, from the Eagles, from the Phillies, certainly, that stick out to you as the greatest games or the most fun or the most entertaining or your favorite, whatever it is. And I do want to get to those because they're worth remembering in times such as these. You know, they're worth remembering whenever you need a win every once in a while. We could stand one now, right? So we'll go into some of our favorite games in a matter of moments here. There is other stuff, of course, that we've got to address as the back and forth continues with Major League Baseball regarding whether a return to play is possible, right? Blake Snell saying that there's no way that he's going to play for the reduced Major League Baseball salary that was proposed as part of that plan that we were talking about on Tuesday. That shouldn't surprise you. We told you to look out for that as, you know, money will be a stickler for all of this. And, of course, the reactions have been on both sides for Blake Snell. Obviously, it's his health and safety that he has the right to be in control of versus you see articles and people responding and saying that, you know, he's virtue signaling or that he's the poster child for spoiled ball players and all this other kind of stuff. Like, so obviously this thing's going to get ugly. It's going to stretch on, I anticipate. But as there are more details and updates available regarding any kind of restart to play, we will share them with you. Doug Peterson talking about how the Eagles offense is going to look different this year. When I heard this, I thought, I sure hope so. Because the offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach no longer with the team. Mike Groh and Carson Walsh out. Spend draft picks on wideouts. Trade for Marquise Goodwin. Outside of the top 10 in scoring for two straight years. Last 2 years, they've been 14th in total offense. It had better look way different. It had better look way different than what it was. Because when we look at it, right, and we talked about this at length when we were doing This Week in Pro Football, and my producer this evening, Tyler Zuli, obviously an integral part of that program as well, where we were talking about the goalposts moving and sliding and changing. And we were talking about what the definition of success was for the Eagles season. Tyler, do you remember these weeks that
yes,
we were doing?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So when we were also, hello, thank you for being here. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
That means a lot.
I appreciate it.
We were talking about how you and I were on the same page, I believe. And Pat was on a different side, Pat Callahan, who's my partner for that program. When we were talking about what a successful season would be for the Eagles, and he said, as long as you win the division and you scratch into the playoffs, that's a successful season. I said that is the old norm. We already saw the Eagles win divisions and stuff like that. You're supposed to be competing for higher titles and loftier goals rather than just scratching into the playoffs because the NFC stinks. The new norm is supposed to be the new norm. I saw this earlier today from USA Today where they projected the seasons for all of the NFL teams based on schedules and God knows what else goes into these computer algorithms and stuff. All you need to know is that they came up with, you know, records, who's going to win the Super Bowl, who's going to compete in the Super Bowl, et cetera, right? But the Eagles were projected to be 9-7 and to be a wild card team. The Super Bowl prediction was the New Orleans Saints over the Baltimore Ravens. That was what the projection was. The question is that acceptable or not? Is that good or not? Or not necessarily good, but good enough. Because as I look at the Eagles this year, I'm pulled in a couple of different directions. And I'm kind of torn for what to expect from this team. So first things first. The last couple of years, the Eagles have looked old. They've looked slow. They've been injured. They've been everything else, right? All of the signs of a declining team have been there for the team. All of the signs that say, the Eagles' dynasty is over before it started and all that other kind of stuff, right? That whole thing, it seems to me that that was the way that the last 2 years have looked. However, what I look at the other side is that Doug Peterson has not been working with a full, healthy complement since 2017. Not a healthy Carson Wentz, not a healthy wide receiving core, not a full complement of backs. And the last time that we saw the team together and fully healthy, we saw them win a Super Bowl and look like the best team in the NFL. So I think that it is easy for Eagles detractors to throw out the F word when it comes to the Eagles. Not that F word. Fluke. That 2017 was a fluke.
Bulls?
Oh, that other F word. Yes.
Is that the one we're talking about?
The other one. That it was a fluke. That 2017 was an aberration. And what you've seen the last 2 years is much more likely going to be what you see from the Eagles for the foreseeable future. This is something that I look at and I think, well, when I think about the way that the team has been put together, the way that the team has been built, the decisions that have been made, who to let go, who to bring back, who to draft, whom to acquire in a trade, I have to admit that I don't have the clarity that I thought I would have. See, I usually feel pretty good going into any single Eagles season knowing specifically the way that I feel about the team. This is a good version of the team. This is a bad version of the team. And the last time that I didn't have great clarity on it was in 2017 when the Eagles ended up winning the Super Bowl. Wasn't quite sure what that team was going to be. But as I sit here now, I wonder if our expectations should have been adjusted based on the last couple of years, right? So if you're looking at it and thinking, well, you know, if the Eagles have a successful year, making the playoffs is great. Or being a 10-win team is fantastic. That would be a lofty goal for the Eagles to achieve. Or is the standard back to regaining that 2017 form? And instead, anything less than 12 wins is not going to kind of whet your appetite. I'm torn on this, and I'm trying to figure it out because I truthfully don't know how I felt when I saw 9-7 being the projection. I don't know what I really, like, what my opinion is on that. And it's partially because I projected the Eagles when we did the inane go up and down the schedule eye roll exercise. I thought 9-7 was a number that I agreed with. But now when I think about it, I don't know. I don't know whether this is going to be a successful season at 9-7 or 10-6. Is it a disappointment if you hit those numbers? Does it only matter what you do in the postseason? As we're coming into this thing, and I look at the projection from USA Today having the Eagles 9-7 and a playoff team, but Dallas winning the division at 10-6, I have to admit that I'm conflicted. I don't want the Eagles to be this dominant regular season team that can't finish in the playoffs. What's way more interesting to me, rather than a 12 or 13 win team, to have the Eagles be a 9, 10, maybe 11 win team, have to play your way through the playoffs, continue to stay hot, be that team that nobody wants to play, and show exactly why over the course of the postseason on the way to an NFC Championship game appearance or a Super Bowl appearance. However, I don't know if that's necessarily what you sign up for after the 2017 Super Bowl. In a time when Tom Brady and the New England Patriots are no longer married, you do have the opportunity to be to fill that power void and jump up to the top of the NFL. To have it be 9-7 and you take your chances in the playoffs, I'm just really not sure how I can feel great about that. Based on the additions that they've made in the draft, based on the trade that they made for Marquise Goodwin, adding Javon Hargrave in free agency, Darius Slay in a trade, I think there's no doubt that the Eagles are better than they were last year when you just purely look at the additions and the subtractions, who they lost versus who they've added to the roster. Malcolm Jenkins is definitely the most noteworthy loss on the team. But overall, it seems to me to be a net positive. It seems to me that that is kind of the way that I would hope things would go. I would hope that the team would improve in the secondary, in the defensive line, certainly by adding speed and explosiveness to the wide receiving core. But as I normally just kind of breeze by these preseason projections, because who knows, right? Nobody had the Ravens doing what they were doing with Lamar Jackson as the you know, effective first-year starter in his second year in the NFL. You know, how many people as a rookie had Patrick Mahomes lighting the world on fire? You know, the preseason projections are always very difficult to really garner anything from. But I saw that the Eagles were projected at 9-7, and that is something that I have not seen in quite some time. We talked about the Eagles kind of graduating to the 11-5, 12-4, 13-3 camp, and that's where people kind of expect them to be based on the head coach, based on the quarterback, offensive line, whatever you want to see. But when I look at it and I see it that way, in black and white, Eagles 9-7, a wild card team, I have to admit, even though it kind of lines up with the way that I anticipated the season might go, I didn't quite get the warm and fuzzies there. If the Eagles go 9-7 as a wild card team, do you have a feeling one way or the other? Or are you just kind of waiting to see what happens in the playoffs at that point? Because to me, you can't be losing divisions to the Dallas Cowboys. It just can't be happening.
Well, I have to say this because of the fact that the number that I gave, if the Eagles go 9-7 and make a wild card this season, then I think it's a successful season. Years prior, I mean, last year I was gung-ho that they were going to get back to form. I had them as a Super Bowl losing team last year to the team that actually ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And not bad. So I think that it was a it was a down year for them. So if they can bounce back and go 9-7, according to my projections, right, which are 8-8, and make a wild card team, maybe steal a playoff game, then that's a successful season to me because you make the playoffs. I don't know for most people though if that's a successful season at this point.
Well, so and that's kind of what I mean is that like when we're looking at it, it's easy for us over the course of the last 3 years, certainly, to be able to really tell based on preseason expectations whether the Eagles exceeded them or failed to meet them, right? There are people that say that they predicted it. I believe that they are lying, that they knew that the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl in 2017 before the season started. That's not true. I got like one or two of those tweets and calls out of everybody that we talk to on a day-to-day basis, right? This 5, 6, 7, 10% of Eagles fandom that knew they were going to win the Super Bowl in 2017, totally, that's nonsense. There's no way. Clearly, that is a team that exceeded preseason expectations. There is no way around it. The following 2 years have each failed to meet expectations. I know that we talked about changing the goalposts and based on all of the injuries and based on this and based on that, excuse after excuse after excuse. I'm reminded of the time that the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl with like 30 people on injured reserve. The Eagles did not meet expectations either of the past two seasons. As a result, I don't know where my expectations are. I know what my record prediction is, but I don't know what that means, like how I should feel about the team. Should I feel that they're a Super Bowl contender that has potential to fall flat? Do I feel like they might be a sleeper team that, you know, might be projected to get a 9-7 record, but maybe they have the talent to be one of these scary sleeper teams like Minnesota's been the last couple of years? Like, I don't know. I truly am coming up empty with how to look at this team. And I think it's because of what's happened the last 3 years.
Well, and my thought process about the comparison between this team and the team going into the Super Bowl run year was I projected that team to be a 9-7 team moving into the 2017 season. And that, to me, was an improvement because the year prior, it was Carson Wentz's rookie year. They were 7-9. We saw some good things. We saw some bad things. We saw some growing pains. We saw Doug Peterson kind of learn to be a coach as he went along.
Saw one of the worst wide receiving cores in NFL history.
Right, and then they bring in Alshon Jeffrey, right, and Zach Ertz gets a year older and a year better, and the offensive line plays really well. But going into that season, I had a 9-7 projection, and they exceeded expectations. I look at this season, going into it, 2 years removed from a Super Bowl, I have less expectations of this particular season than I did for the year that they won the Super Bowl, where I thought they were a 9-7 fringe playoff team. That is scary to me.
Well, is it because you don't like the team as much? Is it because the schedule is more difficult? Like, what goes into it? Because I think it's hard based on, like, for one thing, the pedigree of this team. I think it'd be very difficult to place the pedigree of this team below where that 2017 team was to start.
Well, and I think that that's probably fair, and I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I don't know. Well, I still don't know what this receiving core was going to do with everything else put aside. Even with how bad the receiving core was in 2016, I knew that Alshon Jeffrey was going to make some sort of an impact in 2017. I looked at a young defense, right? Now, I thought that maybe that this could be a budding defense. Malcolm Jenkins still played really well the year prior. He played really well in 2017. So I had I had hope for the team to be on the rise. Add that to what ended up being a much easier schedule, with the exception, you know, of course, they beat down on Denver. We thought Denver might be okay. They beat down on that defense. But other than that, they played a bad Bears team. Mm-hmm. They played a bad Cardinals team.
Teams they lost to. They lost to Seattle.
They lost to Kansas City.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they lost to that game that didn't matter at the end.
Right.
You know, to Dallas. I felt more comfortable, whether it's that, a combination of things or whatever, more comfortable heading into that season than I do heading into this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard for me to say that you're wrong because, well, Alshon Jeffrey's a couple years older and likely not going to be available at the start of the season. DeSean Jackson returns and immediately gets injured, confirming exactly what I expected would happen and what I would fear, what I feared would happen with DeSean Jackson not being able to last the season. Did I know that it was going to happen the first game? No, didn't. But I knew that there was no way that he was going to finish the season for the Eagles. As someone who has turned into more of a Carson Wentz fan than I was at the beginning, which is to say, like, you know, when he had his rookie season, I was one of the ones, I would say, holding back some of the praise and appreciation for Wentz. Oh, look at what he's doing with these bad wide receivers, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, still didn't do all that much. And then he gets help and lights the world on fire, could have won the MVP, et cetera, et cetera. Got one over. It's hard for me to see a world where Carson Wentz is thought of as a sure thing. Talented? Absolutely. Would I take, you know, 10 quarterbacks before him to win a game or for a season or anything like that? There's no way. Definitely, definitely a top 10 quarterback in the NFL at the absolute worst. And he could be considerably better than that, pending health. But I haven't seen 2017 Carson Wentz. The year after that, I saw, you know, back injury Carson Wentz. And the year after that, I don't know what last year was. Total lack of weapons Carson Wentz. It reminded you more of the rookie year, where there was just no one to throw to, no one to go to, no options, and then gets cheap shouted out of the playoffs by Jadeveon Clowney. I have to admit, my uncertainty regarding the Philadelphia Eagles, a large fraction of that has to do with uncertainty regarding how much of an impact Carson Wentz will be able to make positively on this year's team. Because let's face it, if you're looking for a revamped wide receiving core, which is indeed what the Philadelphia Eagles have, how is Wentz getting into a rhythm with those guys? How's he getting into a rhythm with Jalen Reagor? How's he getting into a rhythm with Hightower or Watkins or Goodwin? How's he straightening things out with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside? Given the additional challenges that it's not just the Eagles, every team's facing them, not being able to have in-person OTAs, mini camps, rookie workouts, all that other kind of stuff, you're going to kind of be relying on some similar faces that you've already seen. Greg Ward and Sean Jackson and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Zach Ertz, Miles Sanders. Those are the guys who are going to have to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles offensively this year. And based on what I saw last year, that's not terribly encouraging. Did I see glimpses and shines from Miles Sanders and Zach Ertz and even Greg Ward? Yeah, of course. DeSean Jackson week one, phenomenal. But I'm starting to feel concerned that I know too much. I know too much about this team. I know too much about the pieces. And without being able to bring in and properly integrate rookies, new additions, pieces that need to be kind of acclimated to what it's like playing in Philadelphia, playing within this system, within this scheme, with these coaches, with these players, I have a very uncertain feeling about the projections, the win projections this year. And as such, 9-7 just kind of seems about right. Where do you come down on it? If they go 9-7, pending the playoffs, we know that if you win in the playoffs, it can undo a lot of bad. I completely get that. Teams that limp into the playoffs, if they start winning games, if they start dominating, you totally change the perspective. I get it. On the day that they go 9-7 and make the wild card, is that a successful season or is that a letdown for you? 610-632-0975 is your phone number to climb in. We'll get to your phone calls next. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
sagecountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at backstagecountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. The Wagon, getting right to the heart of it. Because Tyler Zuli has put out on Twitter a poll. Which team do you have more faith in before the season started? 2017 Eagles or 2020 Eagles? Right now, with 160-plus votes in, we just put this up, 52.4% say 2017 Eagles, kind of in line with what Tyler was saying. And The Wagon tweets in, 2017, they projected 8-8, 9-7. That's exactly right. That's why it's relevant to this conversation, because that's kind of not necessarily 8-8. Tyler, that's the lowest estimation I've seen for the Eagles. But certainly between 8-8 and 10-6 is the range where the Eagles are being projected, as opposed to the last 2 years where it was no worse than 11 wins for either of the last 2 years.
Right. And even with Carson Wentz coming back from injury in 2018, it was 11 and 12 wins. And I think a lot of us here were a little bit cautiously optimistic with that team.
Yep.
Last year, I think most of us were pretty much on board with minimum 11 wins. I know I was 12 and 4 and a Super Bowl run. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
no,
I think you were pretty close too.
Yeah.
And it almost felt like an entire season of disappointment, even though they made the playoffs.
Exactly right. And so it's hard for me to get excited about sneaking in when the NFC East is historically bad. Hard for me to get excited about that when 12-4 is what we're talking about ahead of the season. That's all. Randy in Mount Laurel leads things off on 97.5 The Fanatic. Randy, you're on the Joe Torti Show.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. So I wanted to just touch base. You had said that the 2017 version of Carson you haven't seen, and you're skeptical about it.
Yes.
But when you look at Carson's numbers over the last, from 2017 to 2019, you're looking at a guy that's got a 4-1 touchdown to interception ratio, and dealing with guys off a scrap heap of receivers last year, threw for 4,000 yards.
Fair enough. But my simple question, does it look the same as it did in 2017? I'm not saying bad. I'm saying, does it look the same?
Well, it doesn't look the same. If you look statistically, though, I feel like he hasn't been given the weapons that he deserves to be as good.
I think you're definitely right. You're definitely, but my point is that we haven't seen the MVP. The stats are no stats, right? We haven't seen the Carson Wentz that looked like the MVP of the league since 2017. That's all I'm saying.
I think, and I respect that. But see, what my point is that he almost has been more of an MVP, being able to do what he has been without the talent. So I understand that he hasn't may have been the MVP flashiness of 2017. But I think his grit and leadership has still been MVP caliber.
No, I think so, for sure. Especially 2018, dealing with like his back injury and stuff like that. Everyone knew that he was just going to throw over the middle because he couldn't press outside. I get it completely. I guess what I'm saying is that whenever, like, for example, like Patrick Mahomes is a terrible example because there are weapons everywhere. But you look at some of the best quarterbacks over the course of their careers, like Tom Brady's one that sticks out, Peyton Manning's one that sticks out, haven't always had all of the best weapons. There have been weapons. There have been pieces there that have helped. But Zach Ertz has been consistent. Ertz has been available for Wentz. It's just, for me, I would feel more comfortable watching Wentz do stuff that looked more like 2017 for me to say, yeah, he's definitely going to do that stuff regardless of what this year's wide receiving core looks like. Is that fair?
No. Yeah, I mean, it is fair. But I think also, too, and the problem with so many of these fans is we hold his expectation to, like you're saying, Hall of Famers Peyton Manning and Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just think that, you know, Carson just, he needs more respect in general from the Philly fan base because we are so hard on a guy who's led the team, been faced with adversity, and does nothing but holds his head high and still goes out and leads us to the playoffs.
Oh, no, and there's no one I'd rather have. Randy, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. Like, don't get it twisted at all. I think that Wentz gives the team the best chance to win. I think that any time a quarterback is going to go through a season or most of the season and throw fewer than 10 interceptions, Wentz has thrown 7 each of the last 3 seasons, I think you've got a really good chance to win. But just as an example, right? Like, you look at Wentz. Let's look at last year, right? Played in all 16 games, threw for 4,000 yards. That was the most of his career. 27 touchdowns, second most of his career only to 2017. Still 7 interceptions. Yards per attempt was 6.7. I'm not necessarily worried about yards per attempt positively or negatively. Right? It's fine. But it didn't feel dominating. Now, part of it is because you've got wide receivers dropping balls that literally would have won games. You're talking about adding 3 or 4 more touchdowns at least. You're talking about adding a couple of wins perhaps to a 9-7 season. I'm just saying it doesn't feel the same. I'm just saying that there was no doubt in 2017 that Wentz was playing the best of any player in the NFL. And I'm willing to concede the ground that perhaps Carson Wentz doesn't have the ceiling that a Patrick Mahomes has or that a Lamar Jackson has. But those are the two guys who have just taken over the league in each of the last 2 seasons. And Mahomes has followed it up, his breakout season, with another MVP season. Or Super Bowl MVP, at least. Lamar Jackson, who knows what he looks like next year. I personally anticipate that the league will catch up to Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens a little bit next year. But that's early to say. My point is that as solid as Carson Wentz has been, and even in 2018, I would describe him as definitely solid at worst, you haven't seen the same kind of dominance as you did in 2017. And truth be told, the 2017 weapons were not that good. Like, seriously, they weren't. Like, Alshon Jeffrey was a big addition, no doubt about it. Nelson Agholor woke up and started playing all of a sudden. Zach Ertz took a big step forward, like Tyler said. Those guys have largely, not last year for Alshon Jeffrey, but largely been around each of the last 2 years, even with Carson being hurt. That's where I, like, it's not that I think that Wentz is bad. I don't. It's that you haven't seen him light the world on fire like he did in 2017.
Well, here's my question to you to kind of counter that is, if you can get in like this time machine, right, and bring those specific players, right, Nelson Agholor from that year, Alshon Jeffrey from that year, and put them on the 2019 roster, right,
uh-huh,
and they're out on the field as opposed to Deontay Burnett and Greg Ward and all of that stuff, Carson Wentz might be an MVP candidate. Because the guy threw for over 4,000 yards with not a single receiver catching more than 500 yards receiving.
So, like, my answer to that is that I believe in like, Occam's razor, the simplest solution is the one. Nelson Agholor stinks, and he's always stunk.
Correct.
Carson Wentz made him when he played at an MVP level in 2017. That's the one year that Nelson Agholor did anything. And that was the year that Carson Wentz is playing out of his mind. So that's what I, like, when it comes to weapons and stuff like that, I don't count Nelson Agholor in there, even though he had a good season, because, like, Deion Branch isn't that good and had, like, a 900-yard receiving season because of Tom Brady playing the way that he did and stuff like that. Like, that's what I look at from that perspective.
I think that that's probably fair. I just don't want to, you know, at least from my perspective, shortchange Carson Wentz for the performance that he put on the field last year, because as good as the MVP caliber performance, the MVP, but could have been if he'd have stayed healthy, was,
mm-hmm,
last year to me was more impressive, because last year to me was a showcase of, this is the bare bones, bare minimum,
yes,
what you're going to get. Go out there and win games. And I know that they were 5-7, and I know that there were times where he wasn't all that great. I don't think, even with how good the throw was to Agholor that was dropped in the Atlanta game, I don't, mm-hmm, think he was all that good in the Atlanta game. There's some games that he wasn't great in. Those last 4 games, to me, are the quarterback that I think that he is, and that was bare bones.
Well, and that's where he gets a ton of credit, is that at the end of last season, chips on the table, with nothing in the cupboard, he's right there. And by the way, There are not five quarterbacks in the NFL that make the throw that he made to Miles Sanders either in the back of the end zone, right? Like, there are some unbelievable plays that he made. It's just, I don't... Offensively, they still were what they were. They were still middle of the pack. They won those games. They were games you had to have, but against bad competition, NFC least, whatever you want to say, right? I'm not hating on Wentz. I'm saying that I would feel more confident if he was coming off of a season lighting the world on fire. It's not that I don't have confidence in Wentz, because if you can do what you did without a 500-yard receiver last year, making the postseason and all of that, that's great. But they were still middle of the pack offensively. I think that shortchanges what the defense was doing for most of the year as well. You know, saying that, you know, they didn't have any kind of impact on them making the playoffs. I think that they did. I just don't have any clarity now. A lot of the resources invested in the defense, but we're counting on the offense to kind of carry things and a revamped wide receiving core. I'm just saying we don't have enough information for me to feel confident. So that's why I'm trying to figure out where we should feel about this team relative to that team in 2017 that was coming off of kind of a similar thing. When you looked at the wide receiving core in 2016 and you looked at the wide receiving core in 2020, you came away with like the same takeaway. Literally anything's better. You're bouncing at rock bottom. It's got to get better than that. Chris in Jersey's next on the Fanatic. Hey, Chris. Chris,
hello,
you with us?
Hello.
Hey, man.
Yeah, I'm right here, man. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on?
Hey, man. That's exactly the receiving core. I mean, I'm a Flyer fan, okay? Totally. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not an Eagle fan, but I'm a Flyer fan. But I listen to you guys all the time. But what I'm saying, I mean, you guys will definitely make the playoffs again because, I mean, with Wentz, he made it through the whole entire season with nothing, no receiving core
mm-hmm.
at all, and they made the playoffs. Well, it sucked that what happened, you know, he had injury, blah, 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 concussion. But he rocked, you know, but he made it through the whole entire season with
yep.
no receiving core, you know. So now you got something, which really bothers me about the whole Ertz or whatever his name is.
No, which one, the quarterback or the tight end?
The quarterback.
Okay, yeah, that's Hurts. Yep.
That's like back and forth. You can, I don't know what your opinion is.
It's terrible.
That.
It was an awful pick.
Okay. All right. It's like, man, hook Wentz up, man.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
And then, like they were saying, later on in the draft, then pick up a backup or like Flacco or somebody or something.
Well, yeah, I agree, Chris. In the second round, thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. Not in the second round. And it turns out it's not going to be Flacco because apparently his 2020 season's in jeopardy due to this neck injury situation, surgery, whatever. But there were veterans that were available. Matt, we're going to lead off with you, and then we do have some wide open phone lines, 610-632-0975. How do you feel about this Eagles team relative to how you felt about them before the Super Bowl? And should 9-7 be considered a successful season for this group or not? It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli is producing this program. 6 o'clock hours brought to you by Family and Company Jewelers. Visit them on Route 70 in Marlton, New Jersey, or at familyjewelers.com. South Jersey's diamond destination. I legitimately forgot that Chase Daniel got another contract. Did you remember this, Tyler? Did you know that he's still collecting checks?
Not only is he collecting checks, he got a three-year deal.
$13 million. He's going to make $4.35 million annually. Just tremendous work if you can find it. Jameis Winston got $1.1 million from the Saints.
That man's obituary better read, "The most important person ever was my agent."
Oh, I would just like to thank my agent for what? For everything. You were just magnificent. That's outstanding work.
My wife was okay too, but agent first.
Agent first. Wow. Through one pass for 10 yards, made $12 million in Philly. And that's one third of his NFL earnings with just five starts. That's outstanding.
That's unreal.
Absolutely.
It's great work if you can get it.
I saw him at South Lake Carroll when they were doing like ESPN high school football showcases or whatever. This is even before his Missouri days. And I was like, oh, cool. Wonder where he's going to end up. Little did I know that, you know, 10 years later, this is what we'd be talking about here. Let's go to Matt in Burlington next on The Fanatic. What's going on, Matt?
Yo, what's going on?
How you doing?
I'm good. So, I'm going to, I guess, go on with the talk about Carson Wentz.
Sure.
And the Eagles. So, I do feel, you know, there's positive and negatives. I will say that, you know, in 2017, the success that he had, you know, they were all healthy, and Carson was healthy. And, you know, all the work that he put in the offseason, you know, just showed so much, you know, with the offense and how well they were able to perform together. But also, I mean, adding LeGarrette Blount when we had LeGarrette Blount was huge.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm a little nervous because I feel like in 2018, obviously he didn't perform the offseason. And last year, you know, there's injuries coming in as well. And I don't think we did much in the preseason with our starters either. So I am nervous about the fact that, you know, with what's going on, current events mm-hmm. that, you know, the NFL's got to deal with, I'm nervous that, you know, the way they need the camaraderie and everything to, you know, as a team, you know, I feel like they do so well, like they showed in 2017, so I'm a little nervous about that. But, I mean, I'm a big Carson Wentz fan. I think he's going to do well. And I also, you know, you compare Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, you know, I wonder how much injuries they had to deal with. You know, I don't feel like Tyreek Hill or other guys are going out too much, but I'm not sure. But if there's one question I'll just kind of leave off with was, out of all the draft picks,
mm-hmm.
excluding Jalen Reagor and Jalen Hurts, who do you think will have the best season next year starting from Davion Taylor onward?
Kayvon Wallace. Definitely Kayvon Wallace, I think.
Do you think he could beat out Jalen Mills? Like they would put him with Darius Slay and you'd just be the guy?
I don't know if they would. So it's somebody who covered him a lot, Matt, told me that he projected to be a slot corner of all things. Like that's where he might be the best. So he could have a role there. He could kind of do some Malcolm Jenkins stuff where he's all over the place. He's big nickel. Like I don't know that he's necessarily going to be a starter when they're only lining up four defensive backs. But I think he's going to get a ton of run as a rookie. I really do.
That's good to hear. And, you know, I'm also just talking about Carson Wentz in the offense.
Uh-huh.
I keep thinking about it. Like, I wonder what it's going to be like. What we're going to see, you know, and I think about all the guys. I mean, freaking Marty Morningwig is back. Like, what's on the minds of Doug, and how is it going to be different? Is it going to be like crazy pass? Like, you know, are they going to just try to run up the scoreboard, or are they going to rely on Miles Sanders the most? You know,
yeah.
I'm just so curious.
Well, there's a cool article on Matt. Thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate it. There's a cool article on Philly Voice from Matt Mullen that kind of addresses this and kind of all of the new faces and all of the new voices that the Eagles have brought in on offense from Scangarello and Morningwig's back. And like, you know, I think that they just saw the last couple of years. It just didn't work. Like the offense just didn't work. People bring up once again, I am way warmer. Wow. 4.85 million per TD pass for Chase Daniel. That's tremendous work.
I am higher on Carson Wentz now than I was coming out of his rookie season when everybody was, you know, goo-goo gaga over him. And I feel like I'm kind of still on the Wentz bandwagon, and there are some people jumping off. The stats have never been a convincing or compelling argument for me that the offense has been good, that the passing offense has been good. Now, to answer Matt's question about how many injuries did these guys have to deal with, I mean, I can't speak for Lamar Jackson, where everything kind of went right for Baltimore last year, but I'm old enough to remember when the most important player on the Chiefs offense, even before Patrick Mahomes, was Kareem Hunt, right? And Kareem Hunt, while not being injured, obviously unavailable to the Kansas City Chiefs, and they just plugged in Damian Williams or Spencer Ware or whoever else they had to plug in, and you just, you know, keep on chugging. So I don't know. And Tyreek Hill was banged up, wasn't he? Didn't he miss a couple games? One of the last 2 years? I feel like he did miss time. If I'm making that up, I apologize. Let me go to the all-powerful Pro Football Reference. Yeah, he played in 12 games in 2019. I knew that he'd miss some time. So I don't remember if those were injuries or if there was something else afoot, but he was not always available. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. You can also reach out on Twitter as well, at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic, and at Tyler Zuli, of course. What do you think of that question beyond the top two guys? By the way, I hope that Jalen Hurts makes zero impact. Round three and beyond, who makes the biggest impact for the Eagles rookie year?
Just in rookie season?
Yeah.
It's probably Kayvon Wallace.
You think
I think. I do truly think that one of these two Auburn offensive linemen are going to be a staple on this line.
Okay.
I don't know where, and I don't know who.
Right.
Just with the fact that they think that Driscoll can play all of the inside positions. The fact that, you know, Tego Inago was supposed to be a third or fourth round pick and slipped because of you know, not having OTA or
the combine,
right?
Yeah.
I think that that's a steal in the sixth round. I think one of these two guys are going to become a staple on that offensive line, and I think only time will tell. But for the rookie season, there's no doubt in my mind that it's Kayvon Wallace.
Is it bad that we're not saying a wide receiver? Because I've got to tell you the truth, I'm not entirely convinced that Rager makes a bigger impact than Wallace does rookie year either. I'm not entirely convinced. It's probable, but I'm not totally sure.
I think that he does, simply because they're going to be so in need of a wide receiver to step up and make a play that they might just say, hey, get out there, throw him out there and throw him to the Wolves and see what happens. So it's possible, but he did exclude Rager and Hurts. So with those parameters, it's got to be Wallace.
Yeah, it's got to be Wallace. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. We do have wide open phone lines. A couple of questions on the table. As it's related to Carson Wentz, as it's related to the Eagles, how are you feeling now before the 2020 season relative to how you felt in, you know, the 2016 into 17 offseason? Because the projections for the team are similar. The concerns are similar. Where are you? USA Today has projected the Eagles to go 9-7 and to make the playoffs as a wild card team. Do not have them advancing to or winning the Super Bowl. What do you think? Is that on the money? Is that too low? Is that too high? Would that be a success? Would that be a failure? It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.